Hi, I'm Melanie Tate, and this is Canberra Arts. When John Stanhope left office a few months ago, many Canberra artists were worried they'd lost their greatest champion. Will Joy Birch, the new ACT Minister for the Arts, be as committed to the arts? We'll find out shortly. Also this week, a special treat for devoted Canberra Arts listeners. Keep listening if you'd like to find out how you can be at the opening of Bel Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, and why Fyshwick has been immortalised in a new exhibition, and what's going to be happening with 9 days' worth of jazz at the Street Theatre this week. First, though, we're going to be speaking with Elizabeth Avery Scott, who's a Canberra playwright. Elizabeth Avery Scott's play Love Lies and Hitler was one of the most popular plays of 2010 at the Street Theatre. It was a play that wrestled with a lot of ideas and had sell-out audiences pretty much every night. Elizabeth joins me now in the studio to talk about her work and what's up next. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Mel.
Elizabeth, most playwrights dream of just having a play put on, let alone, you know, having it sell out. I wonder how it felt, this huge response to your play.
Yeah, it was very exciting for me as a writer to have other people appreciate what I'd put out there. And I think the whole team, you know, who collaborated on the work in terms of the director and the actors, just really worked together really well and produced something that people enjoyed. And that's a real buzz.
Now, what kind of a process was it for you writing this play? Because this was a big play in terms of the ideas that went into it, the story. There was a lot going on. I wonder, what was the process in writing it?
Yeah, I guess I wanted to tell the story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a Christian clergyman in the Second World War, who became embroiled in a plot against Hitler. And I wanted to explore that from a really philosophical point of view. Did he do what was right or did he do what was wrong? Throw around some ideas. But I also wanted to relate that to a contemporary story, because I think in Bonhoeffer's time, the ethical dilemmas were sort of big, vast, history-making ones because of the turmoil that the world was in at the time. And I think in our more comfortable society here, we're not facing such grand-scale dilemmas. And so I wanted to create a modern story that was interwoven with the historical story. That was a very intimate and personal dilemma. So I wanted to have that contrast and look at the moral dilemma situation. So the modern story that ran alongside it was of a university lecturer who was also a theologian, who was also the same age as Dietrich Bonhoeffer, when Dietrich Bonhoeffer was killed by the Nazis. And he had a relationship with one of his students and had to sort through, well, is this right? Is this wrong? Is it appropriate? Is it inappropriate? And so a very personal dilemma juxtaposed with a very large dilemma.
So they are big themes. You mentioned theology. I remember it having a lot of feminist ideas in it as well, and issues that were dealt with. How does it feel to present these ideas, which not everybody's going to agree with? We were discussing the play just earlier before we went to air, and I was saying that, you know, some of the ideas I didn't necessarily agree with, but I enjoyed the journey that it took me on. And I wonder, how does it feel to present a set of ideas that people may or may not agree with? I can imagine it's kind of scary as a writer.
I think as a writer you write from your soul, from your heart. So you're exploring ideas that are important to you personally. And there is this desire to express, this desire to get something out there. But I think what I was trying to do with that play was suggest a whole lot of questions and not necessarily pose the right answer. And what I did enjoy in terms of feedback from the public was that people went away talking about it afterwards and arguing about it, in fact. And I think that's an important role as a playwright in society, to be able to trigger discussion. Some people absolutely loved it, some people didn't like it at all, but that's par for the course, I guess, in terms of the subjectivity of art.
Because, well, surely argument is what every artist wants out of their work.
Well, yes, it's it's a good outcome, I think.
Yeah. Now let's talk about what you're working on now. You've had this successful play. What comes next?
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of things on the boil now. I don't have anything coming up on stage in the immediate future, but I am working on a couple of different plays. One is kind of a tribute play to Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot, in a way. Waiting for Godot is about waiting and waiting for things to happen and the boredom that goes along with that, and perhaps waiting for God to intervene. My play is almost a reaction against that, because I think we're going very fast and we don't like waiting. We avoid waiting if we can, and so my play is going to be about how everything is so fast. And technology and language and education, all these things sort of will play into that, and it'll be a story of two characters like Vladimir and Estragon in Waiting for Godot, but their names are even shortened because there's no time for that. Right. So it's V and E, you know, and kind of looking at how some of the themes in Beckett's play might play out in a modern world in quite a very different way. So that's one that I'm working on at the moment. And then there's another one as well. The working title is Brilliant Wives, and that's about women in power and politics, mm-hmm. and relationships with men as well. I mean, you might think of Maggie Thatcher and Dennis Thatcher, yeah. You know, the people behind the woman in power. And
that's probably an interesting take we've not seen before. It's usually the other way around.
Yeah. So I'm working on that one as well.
Now, where do you get time to do this? Because you also run the Canberra Academy of Dramatic Art. How do you get time to do all of this? Do you actually put aside time to write?
Well, I have to, mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, it won't get done. I mean, the thing about writing is it's a solitary exercise, and it needs a lot of headspace, a lot of imagination, and it is very hard to do that at this season of life with three children and running a drama school. But I do try and do it on Sunday afternoons. I try and sit down and shut myself in my room and do a bit of writing then. And I think just having, you know, a block of a few hours to do that is a good start for someone who is, you know, so busy.
Is it your great passion? Is writing the great passion, or is the drama school? Or?
Yes, writing is the greatest passion, but certainly I'm very passionate about the drama school as well. I'm very excited about the progress that we've made in a few short years, and excited about seeing new talent come forward and people being trained, and also people just doing it for the love of it, doing some acting skills or some acting courses just to give it a try, mm-hmm. and explore themselves creatively in that way. That's very exciting for me, and, you know, burns within me, if you like, as well, to be a part of that.
Elizabeth Avery Scott, the playwright, is my guest at the moment. Elizabeth, I wonder how you find Canberra as a space for a playwright, and also, I guess, through the drama school, you would see it directly as a space for actors as well. Is this a place where you can have a career as a playwright, an actor, etc.?
I think it's possibly easier as a playwright than as an actor. I think you can write here and you can send your play anywhere, really. But it is more difficult for actors. It is more difficult. I mean, where things are happening are Sydney and Melbourne and London and LA. You know, there's a lot more work in those areas. And I think what we've seen in recent years is a bit of a talent drain from Canberra, as people, actors particularly, who might have a bit of talent, will go to study in another place, and then will go on, you know, into the industry from there. And I think really one of the things I'm very enthusiastic about is investing in the local industry here, mm-hmm. and that's one of the reasons why we started the drama school and are trying to build up to professional level actor training here, so that some of those people might stay here, train here, make their own work here, and over time I think, you know, we'll see some significant developments in the local industry, because people will create their own work here and it will be of a higher standard, and there won't be that talent drain to the other cities so much.
Who knows, maybe we'll have a national theatre out of Canberra one day.
That would be wonderful.
Wouldn't it be great? Elizabeth Avery-Scott, it's been really lovely chatting with you this afternoon. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks, Melanie.
That's Elizabeth Avery-Scott, playwright and one of the directors of the Canberra Academy of Dramatic Art. You're listening to Canberra Arts. Coming up shortly, we're going to find out why two photographers have been very inspired by Fishwick, of all places. Have you got a great story of change?
Yes, I'm sure. I'm only 21. Look at these.
Now Hear This is when we get eight Canberrans together to tell their true story in front of a live theatre audience.
Suddenly I had this huge adventure in front of me. I had some
dreams. It's your chance to tell Canberra that great story your family love, your friends laugh at, or perhaps you've kept a secret for a really long time. To enter, go to the Now Hear This page on abc.net.au/Canberra.
Thank you very much.
This is Canberra Arts Now, time for some local poetry. Andrew Galan is a local poet and one of the organisers of Bad Slam No Biscuit Slam and Traverse Poetry Slam. Here's his poem, inspired by winter in Canberra.
Where is the werewolf? What is going to be different this winter when vests are still in fashion and I forget my hat but remember my tie? That was how many years ago? And it's the same long feet, the same fake nose, the same peepholes, the same tired green rose. But at least no houses are on fire, and the pub still has the same cider. Though for a brief moment there was fear in the air. And at work I still find the spiders, and at work under the desk I still find the crunchy boogers, and the roaches still run laps of the coffee cup rim, and the cat still looks the other way while it licks its ass, and manicured dreadlocks are still in vogue while the same old vampires jump me, and the buses go on strike, and the cops still fish the odd body from the lake. But the werewolf remains missing. I flick through these blocked pages. Where is the werewolf? But it doesn't matter, because they don't distribute very far, and at least no houses are on fire, and the pub still has the same cider, though for a brief moment there was fear in the air, and it's the same long feet, the same fake nose, the same peepholes, the same tired green rose, and the placeholders are the same, the plastic is the same, the printed words are the same, so the orders have to be the same chairs are on the floors that are the same, these tiles are the same under this roof that is the same, these pictures are basically the same, these letters are the same, this meat pie, it is the same, this brick road, the same, dirty awning, the same, one too many antibiotics, the same, because Canberra, it is the same. And so what? What am I going to do different this winter? What am I doing different this winter? This winter, what this winter's different? What this winter keeps me here? Only one thing has me here, and has that changed a little and changed me a little and got me through more than one winter? What's different about this winter, with the same old, old vampires, the same missing werewolf, the same roaches rim running? Nothing is different this winter. It is the same as last winter, the same. But at least no houses are on fire, and the pub still has the same cider. Though for a brief moment there was fear in the air. And it's the same long feet, the same fake nose, the same peepholes, the same tired green rose.
Andrew Galan with his poem, Where is the Wealth? You're listening to Canberra Arts. I'm Melanie Tate. And still to come, Minister for the Arts Joy Birch, jazz trumpeter Reuben Lewis, and your opportunity to score tickets to the opening night of Bell Shakespeare's production of Julius Caesar on the 3rd of August. Just a moment, we're finding out why Fyshwick is such a pregnant place for the photographer. Now, this is a city of very, very great beauty. Parliament House and the lake are often being made into picture-perfect postcards. But what about Fyshwick? Does it strike you as a place of lush artistic inspiration? Well, for photographers Barb Smith and Andre Laurie, that's exactly what it is. They've put together years' worth of work for an exhibition called Fyshwick, showing until the 31st of July at Photo Access's Hugh Davies Gallery. They join me now. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, we might start with you, Andre. What is it about Fyshwick that's captured your imagination?
Well, for a place we take for granted and only visit for purely practical reasons, if you've got to buy a plumbing fitting or something, it's an absolute visual feast of inspiration. It's got these odd buildings, often painted in very brash colours. There's a lot of signage. A lot of that has some quite unexpected touches of humour. It's full of quirky details, and while it's a kind of messy place full of power lines and cars in the wrong place, if you take the time and trouble to look, it's just full of visual interest.
Barb?
I started photographing Fyshwick when I was at art school in 1991 as part of a personal project. Mm-hmm. And my brief that I gave the art school was that I wanted to photograph commercial buildings as if they were cathedrals, so best light, best conditions, no distractions like parked cars and people, light poles, etc., just the building. Mm-hmm. And they didn't believe me when I said that this would be a challenge, and I enjoyed it so much that I've been doing it more or less on and off ever since.
What are the most special places for you in Fyshwick, or perhaps the most special spots that have yielded the most interesting photos?
Well, I've tended in this recent part of the project to do it street by street so that I can keep track of where the light is. The light is the most important aspect for the photography we've been doing. In the afternoon, Barrier Street is really good. Collie Street any time of day. Gladstone Street. And some of the little side streets that people don't go down so often, like Peary Street and Yulon Street. And I'm sure Andre's got some favourites too.
Andre, Larry, I'd love to know from you, could you describe the most special photograph that you've ever taken in Fyshwick? What it's of and why it's so special?
It's a little hard to pick because I have several extra special favourites. But perhaps the top one, because it's no longer there, is of a painted building in 53 Collie Street. It's got this astonishing trompe l'oeil pseudo-Greco-Roman facade painted on it with columns and a frieze of nymphs at the top. And it works in well. They've sort of fitted in the roller door in the middle of the building because it's a classic Fyshwick warehouse-looking shape. And I loved that. And it always made me smile when I drove past. And it was there for years and years. And it was one of the things that made me think I had to photograph in Fyshwick. And earlier this year, it was painted over.
Oh.
So sadly, and it's now a kind of dark beige with a red roaring bull on it. I don't know the history of the original painted facade, but it's just such a wonderful, quirky, whimsical touch. I'm very grateful I had the chance to get it on film while it was still there. And this also symbolises the constant state of flux you find at Fyshwick. It's changing all the time, and there's seems to be a bit of a redevelopment push on at the moment, and a lot of old places are being either refurbished out of all recognition or knocked down and replaced by more generic modern stuff.
Now, Fyshwick is very famous outside of Canberra, throughout Australia, as being the home of firecrackers and the old Triple X movie, etc. Have you been able to capture much of that essence of it?
Well, not the firecrackers, because that's... we haven't seen any exploding while we've been there, even though we've been there at dusk and early morning and so on. There are quite a lot of shop fronts which suggest things like Triple X ratings and specials and mm-hmm. and so on. Yeah, we photographed those. In my case certainly, I'm not including cars and people. There's not an issue of privacy being invaded. Mm-hmm. But yes, we just treated them like we treated the rest of Fyshwick. Mm.
What response have you had to the exhibition so far?
Well, everything we're hearing back so far has been very positive. We had a nice crowd at the opening and they said lots of nice things. We've had some good comments in the book. Quite a few people... One of our objectives was to show Fyshwick in a new light and encourage people who go there all the time but go away as fast as possible to actually open their eyes and see the fun aspects of Fyshwick. And that seems to be communicating quite well through the work we've got on the walls.
Terrific. Look, it sounds like a really interesting exhibition, and we'll put a photo, one of the photos up on our website, if that's all right.
So, yes, thank
so
you.
People
yeah,
can
you.
Have a look. If you'd like to see Barb Smith and Andre Laurie's Fyshwick, you can see it at the Hugh Davis Gallery as part of Photo Access until the 31st of July. So hurry over to Monica and see that. Thank you so much for coming in this afternoon. It's been a very charged few months in ACT politics, and the retirement of Chief Minister John Stanhope has had many Canberra artists wondering about their future. John Stanhope was a passionate minister for the arts and wasn't afraid to go into battle for it. Well, MLA Joy Birch is now the new arts minister. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Minister. Thanks for coming in.
That's right. It's a pleasure and good morning to you.
Minister, is the arts going to have as passionate an advocate in you as it had in John Stanhope?
Well, I certainly believe that I will follow in John's footsteps. He was indeed very committed to local arts, emerging arts and established artists here in the ACT. And as a new minister and as I've got about and been introduced. Can I say we have an absolutely fantastic and wonderful arts community here, so I'm all about putting my front foot forward and helping them as I can.
Now, you're right, we absolutely do have a thriving arts community here. Have you been connected with the arts community before taking on this portfolio?
Only as one of being entertained and seeking enjoyment through the arts, but now as a minister I'm certainly looking at them differently, and rightly so, but it hasn't taken any of the enjoyment away. In fact, it's given me more respect and encouragement about the depth and diversity we have here about arts, across all form of arts, performing arts, visual arts. We really are blessed with the arts community that we have, and as I get around and move around, I'm seeing opportunities of how I can support them.
Now, John Stanhope was a huge advocate of public art, which I'll come to later. Do you have a passion for one stream of the arts in particular, or is that, or are you kind of not allowed to say that?
Well, I am allowed to say it, but I don't have a passion in particular. I think it's the mood I'm in, whether I'll particularly like music or whether I wanted to be entertained by a stage performance or whether I want quieter moments, you know, in a gallery or exhibition. It really does, for me, it's a very personal experience and interface. So they're all a favourite depending on what I'm after at the time.
So tell us then some of the arts around Canberra that have moved you or have been your favourites in the last couple of months?
I've been really impressed by the work that's coming out of the street theatre. They are, you know, cutting edge. They have small performances. They have bigger performances. And just the energy as you walk in there, just to buy a coffee, for example, it really is, it just goes to show the vibrancy that we can create here through theatre. And I'm very pleased to inherit a good, strong budget bid for the street theatre about building their capacity and looking, creating a performing arts hub around the street theatre. So that's something I've been quite impressed about. But equally, in my spare time of many years ago, I used to do lead light with glass, so I'm very taken with the glass works as well. And when you hear about the international artists that are coming through the glass works, we know that our investment has been well invested, our money's been well invested with a group such as the Artworks.
What was the last show you saw in Canberra?
I went to saw Much Ado.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really quite fantastic.
It was. It was indeed.
Now, yes.
Are there any Canberra artists that you're particularly fond of or that have captured your eye?
Probably not drilling down to individuals, but I know the Indigenous artist, Jenny Martinello, does Indigenous glass works. She's an Indigenous glass artist. So she does some very, very good work and remains quite connected to the Indigenous community and her support and how she trains and skills and carries on those connections. So, you know, that's just one individual, but a lot of our artists in residence programs do connect very strongly to enabling our emerging artists, and that's a very good program, and I think, you know, that we can expand on as well.
My guest is Joy Birch. She is the Minister for the Arts, the new Minister for the Arts here in the ACT. Minister John Stanhope's most controversial, but also, I guess, one of his most loved policy or programs was the public art program, and he hinted a month or so before he left that there was still life in the public art program. Is there still life in the public art program under your watch as Arts Minister?
Well, I know public art always creates a community conversation, and there has been distractors of it, but there in the main there has been a lot of support for public art. And as we move around Canberra or Sydney or Melbourne or even indeed cities elsewhere, some of those long-term memories is usually of a building or a bit of public art. So it is something that as a mature society we do invest in. There are more works online that were commissioned under the pre-existing public arts program, so we will see new pieces come online. Just recently there was a piece installed up near the Belconnen Arts Community, mm-hmm. Which was a very nice piece and more significant because it was the last piece done by that artist.
It's the owl.
No, this was it's a metal work. And now for the life of me, forgive me, I can't remember the name. It is a lovely metal piece, and you know, it was good to have the family of the artist and the Belconnen arts community there and involved in that installation. And we have great regional arts facilities. The Tuggeranong Arts Facility and the Belconnen Arts Facilities really are connected locally with the community. They have fabulous exhibitions on and a range of other works. I know Belconnen is housed to some social enterprises, you know, that makes paper. So it is about... It's art, but it's in art. In what I'm very focused on is arts as a way of a socially inclusive community where we have people able to participate across a whole range of things. And arts is certainly one of those that I really do want to explore a little bit more. Being Minister for Disability as well, I see these potentials, and for youth at risk, that coming through arts really is a forum and a medium that will enable some participation. Tuggeranong Arts Centre, for example, have a very successful program called Messenger, which is for youths at risk. And that has been extremely successful and has made a difference to young people's lives. So that's something that I want to sort of create that depth to our arts community with.
So does that mean we will be seeing more public art?
There will be more public arts in some guise or another.
Minister Birch, thank you for coming into the studio today.
Thank you.
That's the Minister for the Arts, Joy Birch, chatting with us about her new job and her vision for the ACT Arts. How would you like to be at the opening night of Bell Shakespeare's Julius Caesar? You get to see the play, rub shoulders with the actors and creatives after the show. All you need to do is go to the Canberra Arts webpage, fill out the form telling us in 25 words or less about your favourite political backstabbing. Because really, I think Julius Caesar is maybe even where we got the term backstabbing from. But we'll be announcing the winner on August the 1st. And the opening night is August the 3rd, so you need to be available for that night. Like I said, go to our website, abc.net.au/Canberra, search for the Canberra Arts webpage, and you'll find a form on the bottom, 25 words or less, tell us about your favourite political backstabbing. Finally today, are you a fan of jazz? If you are, you're in for a big treat over the next few weeks, because the ANU School of Music and the Street Theatre are putting on the Capital Jazz Project, 9 full days of jazz. Reuben Lewis is at the ANU School of Music. He's a graduate doing his honours this week, and he's also performing in the festival. He joins me now in the studio. Hello, Reuben.
Hi, Melanie.
Reuben, what is the Capital Jazz Project?
Well, it's a series of concerts over 9 days, starting at the end of July, going through the beginning of August, and it's run at the Street Theatre, both at Street 1 and Street 2, and it's a fantastic mixture of both interstate bands from Sydney and Melbourne and so on, as well as ANU staff and established bands, as well as established student groups as well. So it's 9 days of a real mix of original music from various different points in people's careers, I mm-hmm. guess.
So when you think of 9 days of jazz, does it exhaust you or excite you?
It excites me because, once again, that variation of people. And also, I mean, jazz is a very broad term, so we have a very broad mix of different people. So everything from Vince Jones, so classic singer, songwriter sort of thing, to jazz trio, standard sort of stuff. There's a band called Wanderlust, for example, which does everything from free music to Latin music to jazz stuff. So there's a real variety of bands. So jazz in its broadest term, which is the best way to hold a festival, I think.
So tell me about your own practice, Reuben. You're a trumpet player. How did you get into playing the trumpet after that, jazz trumpet?
Well, I began my musical journey in primary school, I guess. I moved here when I was in primary school and started doing the brass bands at school, and Canberra has a very good high school program, so I guess I just sort of continued on through there, went to Lynham High School, and then just basically through support just kept feeding the monster in a sense, and then eventually got involved in some of the pre-tertiary and sort of high school programs that the ANU offers, and then from there I met my trumpet teacher, Miroslav Bukovsky, who's the trumpet teacher and composition teacher at the jazz school. And I've been with him for about 6 or 7 years now, and he's basically been one of my driving forces getting into jazz and all sorts of music. So I guess it's just sort of snowballed from primary school onwards.
What is it about the trumpet that has appealed to you so much over those years?
Well, it's a hard question. I come from a very musical family, artistic family, and yeah, so there was always guitars and pianos and singing all about the house and all that sort of thing. And my father actually was the one who encouraged me to play trumpet in the primary school band. And it was just one of the only instruments that sort of stuck for some reason. So I only have good memories of picking it up and having a play with it and enjoying it. So I can't really tell you why, but it's just been in my head since I started primary school.
Who were the biggest influences over you as a player?
As a player? Well, I guess you start off with all the classic things. It took me a while to get into jazz per se. So I guess my first jazz influences would have been Miles Davis and those sort of trumpet players. I was a big fan of James Morrison. I have to say that was my my first CD I ever bought when I was in high school, but I've since moved on since then. And I guess the thing with jazz, like any music, is that once you start somewhere, you realise that there are lots of people involved in the same sort of things, and eventually, as you dig deeper, it expands more. So I went from Miles Davis onto a whole bunch of European bands, and just sort of, I guess it just sort of keeps progressing and progressing. So at the moment, I'm getting into a lot of Norwegian players and Finnish players, as well as some fantastic Australian trumpet players and other musicians as well. But it just keeps, you know, the more you dig, the more you find, basically.
So tell me about what you'll be playing over the 9 days of the
9 days
of the festival.
Yes, well, my group, the Reuben Lewis Quintet, is playing on the 5th of August. We are playing after Zoe and the Buttercups, which is, I think she originally studied at the Canberra School of Music, actually. So her band is playing at 9:30 on the 5th of August, and then my band is playing on the 11th. At 11 o'clock
at
night. Yes, we
have the jazz hours, aren't they?
Yes, we have the late night set, which should
fantastic.
Be good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so my band's been playing for a couple of years now, and we play original music by myself and other members of the band. So expect to hear everything from African grooves to completely improvised stuff to reggae, I guess, anything.
Wow, sounds exciting. We're going to actually hear something now from your CD, which is called Somebody, and here is the Reuben Lewis Quintet. Thanks for coming in, Reuben.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That was a Reuben Lewis Quintet and a song called Think Before You Lick the Cat. That's all we have for this week. Don't forget to go to our webpage if you'd like 2 tickets to see the closing night of Julius Caesar, Bell Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. You can get them from our website, abc.net.au/Canberra. Have a lovely fortnight.